This is episode number 35 with the managing director at Boxwood Partners, Brian Alas.
Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in.
Hey, what's up, Path to Freedom listeners? Thanks for dropping in with this week's episode. Got a very cool guest joining me today, Brian Alas. Brian is a managing director with Boxwood Partners, which is a boutique mid-market investment banking firm based in Jupiter, Florida. So I got to know Brian a little bit 4 or 5 years ago, and then he and I have just stayed in touch and, you know, thought it would be great to have Brian join the podcast because while he's very entrepreneurial in his own right and also heavily involved in the world of franchising, he's involved in a very different way than anyone else that I've had on the podcast. So I thought it'd be great for him to come on and share his perspective. So Boxwood Partners, as I mentioned, mid-market investment banking firm. Basically, they work with companies. They have a kind of a niche that they've established in the franchising space, working with franchisors, and particularly a lot of franchisors in the home services space. But they basically work with these companies from a consulting and a strategic standpoint to help make sure that the owners and the founders of the companies have the businesses structured so that if and when they're ready to exit, essentially sell their business, then the business is going to be valued as high as possible based on what it's worth. And then they're able to go out and help line up qualified, interested buyers and help facilitate a transition. Brian brings a lot of unique insight, shares some great advice here on the podcast that's relevant to any business owner or any aspiring entrepreneur for that matter. He shares a lot of advice around things you should be thinking about in terms of preparing your business for an exit strategy, even if that's a very long way down the road. Also talks a lot about franchising in general, you know, how franchisors should work with their franchisees, a lot of best practices that we discuss in this episode as it relates to franchising and that relationship. So very excited for you to hear this episode with Brian. With that, let's go ahead and drop in. I'm excited to have you on because you bring a little bit of a different perspective than any of the other guests that I've had on so far. And I try to, you know, make sure I'm talking to a wide variety of guests, whether it's, you know, their experience, their background or whatnot, but you're going to bring, I think, a whole nother perspective to the podcast. So I'm excited about that. For people that maybe don't know you or aren't familiar with what you do and your company,
yeah,
give us a little bit of your background and talk a little bit about your company and what you guys kind of specialize in.
Sure. So I appreciate you having me on. And obviously, we've known each other for a number of years now. If you told us 5 years ago, we'd be sitting here doing this, I probably would have laughed at you.
Yeah, same. Same.
But the, Brian Alas, I work at Boxwood Partners here in Richmond, Virginia. We also have an office down in Jupiter, Florida. I'm a managing director in our investment banking practice. I've been here for about 7.5 years or so now, doing lower middle market, sell side M&A. So if you are selling a business, founder, owner, operator, looking to, you know, sell a business to private equity or strategic buyers, you know, we're the ones that kind of help facilitate that deal for you. You know, we are your kind of go-to resource when you go to look to sell a business, and we can help from anything from just consulting and strategic advisory all the way to selling your business for you.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I mean, you guys do a lot more than just, you know, kind of brokering deals. You're really working with your clients in a strategic capacity, in some cases for quite a long period of time before any sort of a transaction actually happens, really giving them some guidance on, you know, what they should be doing and what they can be doing to prepare for, you know, an acquisition or to sell their business.
And I know I'm gonna jump the gun on you a little bit because I saw it later on in the agenda, but you know, most of the business owners that we talk to, they don't prepare to sell their business.
Yeah.
Right. So when they get into the business, they start this business, they never think about what the business needs to look like from an exit perspective. Right. Mm-hmm. So to your point, right, we've more and more, we're getting involved sooner and sooner in the life cycle of a business, helping folks think through very basic stuff, right? Hey, what should the size of my franchise territory be? Okay. Why is that important when I go to sell the business? Right.
Yeah.
Rebate agreements with vendors. Right. I mean, if you're, you know, we just did this with Monster Tree, right? I mean, they do a lot of, you know, purchasing of equipment, right? Something that Josh and, you know, possibly kind of spoken about in terms of whether or not there was opportunities there. Even the basic things of, hey, what should my royalty rate be? Mm-hmm. Right. Little things like that, that we can come in, you know, years, even sometimes beforehand, and kind of help them steer directionally, so that way when we go to exit or we go to run a process, that there are certain things that we know they're going to come up in diligence that folks need to get prepared for. So we've been doing that more and more recently, and it's been successful.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And you know, we kind of work it with clients, I guess you could say, at different levels. I work with a lot of people that are looking to maybe get into business as a franchisee, where you guys, you know, tend to work more with franchisors at that level. It's something I talk about with the people that I work with before they even know what business they're getting into, is I ask them, like, you know, have you thought about kind of what your exit strategy is for owning a business? You know, and I'm more so asking them along the lines of, you know, how long do you want to own a business for? But, you know, nothing lasts forever, but it usually shocks people a little bit when I start talking about exit strategy before they're even in business. Yeah. But, you know, to your point, it's something you need to be thinking about. If you get into the wrong business, because I mean, you know as well as I do, in the world of franchising, some franchise businesses are easier to exit than others. You know, as a franchisee, some are not really built to scale, and that can be a hard business to exit if you, as the business owner, are kind of doing everything yourself.
No doubt about it, right? And I think what you're finding more and more, though, too, is even family-owned businesses, and franchisors is where we've historically spent our time. Sometimes there's not another family member that wants to step in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's not, right? There might not be a president who wants to buy the business from the original founder. So there's little basic things like that folks don't even realize. And here's another good one, right? If you're working with any franchisors out there who are just starting their business, and they have aspirations of getting, you know, to 100, 200, 300 territories and selling it to a, you know, private equity strategic buyer, they should be doing estate planning now. Mm. Right? It's little things like that from a tax perspective, even, that the sooner you have a valuation done on the equity of your business, the lower your basis is going to be. And typically those will take 6 to 12 months to kind of put in place. All right. So if you have anyone that you're talking to that's considering retirement in the next 3 or 4 years, right? Consult your tax advisors, right? Call us, whoever it may be. Start planning things out for an eventual exit, because the more planning you do, the better off you're going to be in the end.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's important, like we've already kind of discussed, to hit on these things a lot earlier than what most business owners tend to. And it, you know, it kind of makes sense, especially, you know, for a brand new business, they're just trying to figure out how to grow their business, you know, how to keep their head above water. The last thing they're thinking about is, you know, how to set everything up so that they can have a strong and successful exit. But that's where a company like Boxwood comes in, and you can kind of take some of that off of their plate and also give them guidance based on all of the experience and the other businesses that you've worked with. You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you guys have at Boxwood have kind of historically, you know, worked with franchisors. And I know you've been with Boxwood since the very beginning, pretty much. So did you guys come into this saying, hey, we want to focus on the franchising sector and work with franchisors? Or is that something that you kind of fell into unintentionally?
A little bit of both. So for maybe your listeners out there, so Sweet Frog Frozen Yogurt was based here in Richmond, founded in 2009. And Pat, my colleague and boss here, he was an investor in that business, owned a minority stake in the business. you know, it just so happened at one point in time that we ended up taking that business over in 2015. So I was 2.5 years in to my time here at Boxwood, right? We had, I'd gotten to know franchising, and Pat stepped in as the CEO. And we were, you know, our former partner and another guy in our office, Chris, were kind of all boots on the ground for a couple of years, turning that business around. It was a franchisor, and there was 375 units at the time.
That's, you know, a pretty big turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, well, 338 states and three countries or whatever it was. And I mean, system-wide revenue was pretty strong. Got to understand kind of the nuances of franchising, understanding franchise law, understanding, you know, the territory overlaps, et cetera. And what we ended up, you know, Pat spent most of his time there for a little bit of time. And we just started networking the industry, right? So went to IFA, right? Went to the multi-unit conference, started to just go to a lot of these events. And one of the people we met there was Jeff Duden. Mm-hmm. And Duden, you know, who's a former client of the firm and a friend of Boxwood, to say the least, gave us an opportunity to help him in 2018 to sell his business. And I guess we started in 2017 and sold in 2018. But that was a huge opportunity for us to get into the home services space.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, it's been just a snowball effect, right? You say this about every industry, franchising is extremely small world, right?
Yeah.
You and I met maybe 15, right, when you were a shelf genie way back, which is a business that we worked with for a number of years. So it's just, we sought it out, and then, you know, I don't know if we ever planned to be this deep, but we're pretty deep and enjoyed kind of getting to know it. We truly understand kind of all the nuances in and around franchising now.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme on this podcast. Anytime I'm talking to someone else that's heavily involved in franchising, usually two things in common. One, they somehow or another kind of fell backwards into franchising, but then they fell in love with it and you know, they've stayed in franchising. And then, you know, they always make a comment along the lines of what you said, which is it's a very small world once you get into franchising, and you know a lot of the same people. And I think it's because franchising attracts a lot of minds that think a lot of entrepreneurial minded people and just like-minded people. And funny you mentioned Jeff Duden. He and I were just emailing back and forth the other day about him coming on the podcast, so hoping to have him joining me here in the next couple of weeks. But so, you know, what was it about franchising though, after you guys kind of started going down this niche of, you know, working with franchisors, you know, what is attractive about franchise companies to firms like yours and also to, you know, the buy side, right? People that are looking for strategic acquisitions.
So I'll answer that in two parts, right? The first part is, if I think about it for the buyer universe, right? It's the recurring royalty revenue, right? Mm-hmm. And at the franchisor level in particular, you know, that's an attractive, you know, recurring revenue stream for a lot of private equity and strategic buyers. I think the control that, you know, majority shareholders are going to have in a franchise or over the brand, the direction, how they're going to grow, very attractive to, you know, the buyer community. And, mm-hmm. and let's be real, the franchise agreements are contractual agreements, right?
Sure.
So it's contractual revenue, et cetera. And you kind of get to dictate, you know, how that FDD looks every year. So I think there's those aspects draw a lot of really intelligent, sophisticated investors. You know, what did we love about, you know, franchising? It's one that buyers love franchises, right?
And sure.
Right. Yeah. So we know that there's always kind of a captive audience when we take a deal to market. I think the bigger thing for us is kind of, and this has kind of changed our viewpoint over the last couple of years, is when we got into AdvantiClean and started working in and around the home services space, what kind of blew me away was the rise of digital marketing, right? So the Scorpions and Red Ventures of the world, you know, the localized SEO, the local Google marketing, the franchisors that understood how to do that have truly differentiated themselves, not only right now, but I think going forward.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is my, you know, and I won't speak for everyone at Boxwood, but if I think about franchise brands versus non-franchise brands, in particular in home services, most of the guys that are your local competition are chucking a truck.
Yep.
Right. And they're founder-owned businesses who work hard. My mother would probably get mad at me for this, right? But my mom, you know, if something's wrong with the house, my mother would probably always go to the Yellow Pages, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Now she's going to Facebook.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are millennials. Our wives are millennials, right? We're going to Google, Facebook, Instagram,
Thumbtack. Yeah.
Right? Whatever it is, right? We're going, that's where we're going. And I just think from a longer term perspective, I'm talking 10 years out, right? The franchisors that have nationally prominent brands that are active on digital media and have one consistent messaging across all digital platforms going forward are going to be at the top of the Google page.
Yep.
Versus someone who's in a, you know, who's here in Richmond, right? Who may have, you know, just a small 20 people plumbing business or whatever it may be. He's going to have to spend a lot of time, energy, and money to get, you know, on the top of a Google page, just from an SEO perspective, right?
No doubt.
And I think if you're a national brand and you know how to figure out the digital marketing game, from an organic growth perspective, it's going to be a home run over the next 10 or 15 years. As you know, just from a macro perspective, the millennial home buyers, first time home buyers, we're going to be in the market for the next 10 years, right?
Yep.
You know, and that's what we love kind of around home services that really kind of drew us to spend more time here.
Well, you're speaking my language. I love this because I'm a big fan of home service businesses within the realm of franchising. The franchises we own are all in the home service space. And, you know, I've talked before about, you know, why personally we've been attracted to those types of businesses, but it's always interesting to me, you know, as I'm working with different candidates that I work with and talking about different types of franchises that are out there, you know, a lot of people have a similar reaction when I bring up home service and they're like, yeah, no, I don't see myself in that type of business. Like, you know, maybe I want to be in something that's more, you know, involved with technology or something like that. And I'm like, well, what you've got to understand is that a good home service franchise is heavily involved in technology. It may not be the service that you're selling, but yeah, they're leveraging technology in a big way. And I think the other, you know, kind of component to everything that you just talked about is, this is kind of how I explain it to my candidates, is in the service space, especially because there are so many locally independently owned companies, what you referred to as chuck in a truck or mom and pop, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
they just don't have as sophisticated of an approach to operating the business. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. They don't have the systems and the processes. They don't have, you know, the teams and the national branding behind them that they can leverage like a franchisee with a good system can. And in the home service space, what that ultimately results in typically is, if it's an unsophisticated company, a poor experience for the client, right? Ask any home buyer if they've ever had a bad experience with a contractor or a plumber or electrician, you know, not returning their phone call, not showing up when they were supposed to, not finishing the project on time. In a franchise business, because you have these systems and processes, the end result is more commonly than not a great experience for the client. So, you know, you're talking about Google, you can have better reviews, right? That's going to help you rank higher too, but ultimately it just puts you in a position to outperform your competition in an industry, home services, where the bar is set pretty low as it is in most homeowners' minds.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head, right? If I just go back to kind of our clients, right? I mean, Shelf Genie, Monster Tree, Dryer Vent Wizard, Stop Restoration to an extent here too. I mean, they all had one thing in common, right? And it was the value proposition of the franchisee. And it all came back to systems, right? I mean, you know, you own a couple of Shelf Genie franchise territories. Yeah, you know, Wish Portal is the reason that your life is much easier than it maybe
much
this
easier.
Who's independent, right? Monster Tree, you know, Josh's system was able to get, you know, estimates and hours, not days, right? It's little things like that that improve the end customer experience that make that franchise agreement absolutely worth signing. And I think that's where we've, you know, the first question we get from a lot of buyers is, hey, you know, they're charging X percent in royalties and in marketing. What are they doing to justify that at the franchisor level? And, you know, to go right into systems, national ad buying, scalability, support, et cetera. But it all comes back, all the successful processes we run, it's come back to, hey, what are the technology needs that you're giving to someone to make their lives easier, right? Because the best franchisors, right? And this is a conversation I had with a startup franchisor the other day. They asked me a really good question. They said, hey, you know, what's our number one priority? I said, the sooner you realize that your franchisees are your customers, the better off you're going to be. And I think the best franchisors, I don't want to say they don't think about the end customer, right?
Yeah.
But the sooner you realize that your customers are your franchisees, the better off you're going to be, because you start to think about, all right, let me put myself in their shoes. What would make their life easier? And when you start to make decisions like that, the referrals, the validation calls, you know, you start to see your network just kind of go through the roof.
Well, no doubt. And it's also, from a strategic standpoint, the smartest thing a franchisor can do, because as you mentioned earlier, the reason private equity companies and other, you know, buyers are interested in franchising is because of the recurring royalty revenue. And this is part of what I explain to candidates that are maybe not as familiar with franchising and have the same types of questions, right? Why would I want to pay a franchise fee up front and then pay a percentage of my revenue ongoing to be a franchisee? But, you know, part of the beauty of franchising and why it works and why it's been a business model for so long is everyone is mutually aligned, right? As you put it, the franchisee is kind of the franchisor's client. You know, it's a partnership, right? The franchisor, it's in their best interest to do everything that they can to help their franchisees be successful. And the more successful the franchisees are, the more successful the franchisor is. And that's what some people don't quite understand if they're not very well versed in franchising. Once they get that, I can usually kind of like see a light bulb go off and they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then it is a matter of just understanding, all right, what are my expenses to become a franchisee upfront and ongoing? And then what am I getting in exchange for that? And different franchise companies offer value to their franchisees in different ways. With Shelf Genie, you know, it's the things you mentioned, the technology, the systems, and the processes. But, you know, I pay 7% of my revenue back to Shelf Genie. But, you know, I probably get my materials at least 15% less than what I would if I was Wes's custom shelving company and sourcing it myself. So I'm 8% better to my net.
I got to cut you off, right? Because I can't give you the details, but I'll tell you that, you know, I had to do that analysis for buyers.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I'll tell you right now, you're getting a deal, right? And you're right, 100%. If you had to go source that elsewhere, you know, it would be more expensive, right? Here's another example for folks that are maybe might be more practical, right? On local marketing services, right? You know, the franchisor negotiating for a set rate for their franchisees because there's 300 territories, right? It's not because there's three, it's because there's 300, right? And I think, you know, whether it be Google or Facebook or whatever it may be, you know, media buying, there's value in scale. And I think there's always a healthy tension between franchisor and franchisee, right? And I think what most franchisees don't realize is the scale of the franchise system absolutely matters when it comes down to, you know, providing better quality service and more support back to the system.
Well, and it also helps a franchisee when they're ready to exit their business, right? You're going to have an easier time selling a Shelf Genie franchise, a Monster Tree franchise versus, you know, your own independent brand that nobody's ever heard of. And again, that's where it comes back to another reason it's in the franchisee's best interest that, you know, that system that they're a part of scale as much as it possibly can, because it will result in more buying power that the franchisor can leverage to add benefit to the franchisees, but it also just makes it easier to exit when you're ready.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I we've gotten to know a lot of strategic buyers in the space, right? From the Neighborly's, the Authority Brands, you know, Home Franchise Concepts, Harris Research. I mean, a lot of the players in the space. Again, what I don't think, and not to divulge anything confidential, but what I don't think franchisees realize is how much of an advocate those guys are in negotiations with the vendors on their behalf.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a huge deal that I think is just it's kind of the keys to the kingdom on the franchisor side, right? Is again, when you shift your focus to your customer is your franchisee and you start to make decisions on behalf of them for their betterment, that's when systems really start to succeed.
And it should be noted that not all franchise systems are created equally, right? I mean, there's thousands and thousands of franchise organizations out there. They don't all understand these things that we're talking about, right? I mean, there are franchises out there where the franchisor definitely does not look at their franchisees as clients or as business partners.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot with buyer universe, buyers out there and private equity in general, right? I think that, you know, the segment that you and I play in home services right now, you know, we're calling in the bottom of the second inning, right? I mean, I think restaurants are, you know, probably the top of the eighth, top of the ninth, right?
They're at least restaurants as we know them, yeah.
Right, but it's a mature industry, right?
Yeah.
You have private equity ownership of the franchisor. You know, I don't know if you saw it the other day, but Main Post Partners is a private equity firm in San Francisco. They own Flynn Restaurant Group. Mm. Made an $800 million acquisition of 1,300 Pizza Huts and Wendy's.
Wow. Like, so that was from a franchisee then, right?
The franchisee owned by private equity, right?
Right, yeah.
So the same thing in fitness, right?
Yeah.
You know, the fitness franchisors take off. And then you've seen, you know, private equity invest in the franchisor. And now, you know, the Planet Fitness, the Crunches of the world, you're starting to see private equity move into the franchisee system, right? Suspect we're going to see that, you know, maturation process of home services over the next 10 years, where you're going to see, I think, a proliferation of brands, right? They're going to come in and niche services. I think you're going to see further consolidation from the bigger strategics. I know about a few, but I can't talk about them yet. There's a few platforms that are starting to be formed of multi-brand, you know, multi-service conglomerates within home services. They're, you know, not going to compete with the Neighbourly's and Authority brands of the world just yet in terms of size. But they're going to be, you know, maybe 5-10 million of EBITDA or whatever it may be, you know, have 6 or 7 different service lines. I think you're going to see that consolidation happen over the next 3 to 5 years. And then I think you're going to see a rush into the franchisee network, right? And I think most of your, you know, people you're talking to, something I would keep in mind is I think from an exit perspective, at some point in the next couple of years, private equity will actually be an option for them, right?
Yeah, agreed. I think
if you get to scale, and when I say scale, you know, if you're a franchisee of a home service brand that does, you know, $3 million of revenue, if you get to 10, you're going to start to catch the attention of some private equity firms, and I think that is going to be a trend that I think we'll see start to pick up. I mean, we're starting to see it candidly on our side, but I think you're going to start to see it become more prevalent in the next 18 to 24 months.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's exactly something I wanted to ask you about. If franchisees were actually a target for private equity. I mean, I know a franchisee, husband and wife, built a nice, you know, $3.5 million a year business. Their franchisor has been owned by a private equity firm for about the last six and a half years. That private equity firm is gearing up to sell. And so they're buying up some of their highest volume franchisees, you know, to strengthen their balance sheet before they go to sell. These guys had no intention of selling their business. They got made an offer they couldn't refuse, and they got, you know, life-changing money that they weren't even, you know, looking for. And now they're you know, looking for their next opportunity.
And I think that's what's great about the deal market in general, right? Is and I don't know the particulars of that certain situation, right? But suspect that franchisor is going to do pretty well in their exit too, because they're probably selling for a higher multiple than they paid to the franchise.
Oh, no doubt. That's why they could justify coming in and making them an offer that they couldn't refuse. And
I think what you're going to see is you're going to see, you know, private equity start to get more comfortable working with private equity owned franchisors.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
And encouraging that growth and consolidation, because, you know, let's be real. There's, you know, if I think about home services in general, there are some franchisees out there that are probably ready to retire and may not have the succession plan that we talked about earlier. And the franchisor doesn't want to see, you know, a $3 million territory go away overnight. Right.
Yeah.
And they're going to do anything they can to kind of keep it open. So I think there's going to be a role for private equity to play in the franchisee network in the next couple of years too. And we're excited to kind of see how things unfold.
Yeah, I'm excited too, especially as we keep building our franchise businesses, because I certainly wouldn't mind having a private equity firm come knocking in a few years.
You know who to call.
Yeah, I do. I've got a guy, you know, kind of talking about planning your exit strategy. I mean, for us, and I've talked about this on the podcast, like, you know, we have two territories for Shelf Genie, right? Average is like six. So we have a lot less territory, but we've got a great business and the profit margins are very solid. I think part of that's because we actually have less territory to focus on. So our kind of long-term growth strategy is not go out and keep buying a bunch of territory for one brand. It's add complementary businesses where we can focus on a smaller area, leverage an existing client base and the reputation that we've established for ourselves as business owners. But that's strategic, right? When we're ready to start exiting, right? We've got three businesses that are part of this little umbrella right now, a fourth one launching in early 2021. When we're ready to exit, I'm looking for a buyer that wants to buy the whole kit and caboodle, right? I'm not interested in selling them off, you know, piece by piece. It's going to be an enterprise that's for sale.
Yeah, and I think that'll be logistically, we should probably talk about that just because you know how, you know, the approval process of selling a franchise, you got to sell the franchise over, right? And you might be dealing with four different private equity groups at one point in time when you go to exit.
True. Yeah, true.
But, you know, totally a viable option, right? And if you, again, I think what's interesting about your strategy is you're probably going to be able to take something from all of these franchise systems, right, from a marketing perspective or back office perspective and kind of pick and choose what you think the best things are going to be about each and applying it to multiple businesses. Because the blocking and tackling of running a business is, you know, I don't want to commoditize and say it's the same, right? But the best practices that are used on a hiring perspective at, you know, Shelf Genie are probably going to be the same thing at a Koala, right? Or a Monster Tree or a Dryer Vent Wizard.
Well, no doubt. And like even with Koala, which we haven't launched that business yet, but, you know, I've already had some conversations with their marketing department and said, look, these are things that we've had a lot of success with at Shelf Genie. Do you have any franchisees trying that yet? No, but we'd be open to. So I think there's some things we'll be able to bring to the table and then some other things that we'll learn from Koala that we'll be able to bring back to Shelf Genie. And like, it's just, yeah, you're kind of learning across all of these businesses. Not everything will apply, but you'll be able to definitely apply best practices, you know, across those businesses. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast, and that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life, and it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision, and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode.
You know, you've kind of alluded to the fact that at Boxwood, you guys are really focused on the home service space right now. I think there's a lot of good reason for that. It's probably a common stance, but you know, globally speaking, are private equity companies and buyers out there, is there a particular type of franchise system that they're really attracted to? And I'm thinking more along the lines of, are they really looking for more emerging concepts that still have a lot of runway ahead of them? Are they looking for mid-sized companies, or are they more focused on kind of mature systems that they can help fine tune, or is it just really specific to the private equity firm?
Both, right? So let's break that down into two parts, right? The COVID thing, I think, yeah, home services are going to be in style, right? And you know, in vogue and on trend, et cetera, for the foreseeable future. I think that was going to happen regardless of COVID.
Right?
Insulated, but I think that was happening, you know, regardless of COVID. I think the restaurant space, the fitness space, you know, COVID aside, there's always going to be buyers for franchisors in all of those industries.
Yeah.
Right? I actually think that, you know, one of the maybe more emerging segments of franchising is kind of the B2B side of things, right? Where you're a franchisor and doing services for municipalities, right? Or buildings and janitorial services, whatever it may be. It's like a Coverall or a JanPro, Intelligent Office. Some of those are out there. I think franchising is always going to be in vogue. And I think the cool part about private equity that most don't realize is there's really a private equity firm for everyone. There are firms that are 100% focused on buying franchisors that are emerging. There are firms that are 100% focused on kind of the mid-tier franchisors. And then you have the firms that are focused on the franchisors. So the ServiceMaster deal that just happened, right? ServiceMaster just got acquired by Roark. Roark's one of the best, you know, private equity firms in franchising. They have a tremendous background. Orange Theory, you know, Auntie Anne's, I mean, Focus Brands, they've done kind of every big franchisor, regardless of industry, right? There is a Roark at every part of the franchising market, right? So I don't know that anything is truly ever out of style. And as we get back, you know, back to the discussion we had earlier, recurring revenue, contractual franchisees, national brands, digital marketing, control of a brand. The story's pretty consistent across all industries of franchising. And I think the folks that are emerging franchisors that find those little niches where no one's really playing right now, you know, have the chance to be really successful.
I love that insight, especially, you know, some of the things you mentioned around the impact of COVID. You know, not that anyone has a crystal ball. Do you see any particular industries within franchising, you know, really being shaken up as a result of COVID and, you know, maybe not fully coming back or having to really, you know, make some big time pivots or changes to the way they've historically done business?
I don't know what's going to happen with the restaurant industry. And if you think about the real estate game, you know, having, you know, space between seats, I don't know how this is all going to play out for the restaurant space. Yeah, I think you're going to see more drive-thrus.
Yeah, agreed.
Ghost kitchens, stuff like that. I think the restaurant industry will adapt. I think where you're seeing, you know, a lot of consolidation and kind of innovative thinking is in fitness. Mm-hmm. You know, one company we've worked with in the past is Burn Bootcamp on a consulting basis. And you know, Devin and Morgan have done a fantastic job of going virtual, right? And building a presence on social media. And being, you know, able to be, you know, adapt to a COVID environment, right? Wouldn't shock me if that's a key part of their value proposition going forward.
Yeah, it should be.
It probably will be, right? I mean, those two have built a hell of a business and they really know how to think on their feet. And again, they put themselves in their customer's shoes and what would the customer want, right?
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see a lot of that stay across home services, fitness, you know, restaurants. Things are going to change, but probably change for the better.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll be interesting to see how everyone reacts. But even if something is so basic as, hey, we're going to have our call center be 100% remote now, you know, for a home services brand, you know, I don't see that changing. right? So maybe home service companies need less office space going forward. You know, it'll be interesting to see how all three industries kind of react.
Yeah, it really will. And I've told this to candidates that I'm working with, and I think you've kind of highlighted the same thing here, which is like, there's never been a better time to be researching a franchise business than right now, in my opinion, or at least, you know, since I've been involved in franchising, because you really get some insight into who it is you'll be partnering with, you know, as your franchisor. How have they reacted and how have they adapted, you know, to everything that's going on? You know, have they demonstrated that they have the ability to pivot? And as you put it, you know, using Burn Bootcamp as an example, you know, were they able to put themselves in their client's shoes and do the right things for their clients? And you're going to get to talk to franchise owners, right? If a franchise owner doesn't feel like their franchisor has done a good job of supporting them through these very uncertain times, they're going to let you know that, right?
But I can tell you from my experience at Sweet Frog, that is absolutely true. And Pat, I'm sure, would say the same thing. But, you know, sometimes some companies call them franchise partners, right?
Yeah.
And they're franchise partners for a reason, because, you know, you're in this together. So I expect to see some pivoting, some people adapt, and maybe some new service offerings. But at their core, right, I mean, if we sit here 2 years from now, right, and have the same conversation, you know, I don't think COVID's a conversation, or at least I hope it's not, right?
Yeah.
It'll be a question that everyone asks, hey, what happened during COVID, right? And, you know, Shelf King is a good example. I mean, you guys couldn't go in people's homes.
Yeah.
Right.
We started using Zoom to do sales consultations, and we were selling jobs that way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And selling jobs that way. And that's going back to the tech aspect. That's because of SketchUp, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys have that versus, and I won't name names, some of your competitors are still relying on CAD drawings and taking measurements. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
So there are, you know, definitely be interested in franchising right now and kind of picking the winners. And you'll figure out kind of who they are pretty quickly by doing your diligence and your validation calls. But I definitely think it's a pretty interesting time to be looking to get into franchising.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, one thing I wanted to ask you while I've got you, because, you know, Shelf Genie just, I guess we can talk about this here. If not, tell me and we can edit it out. The Shelf Genie just went through an acquisition, and when it happened, when it got announced to the franchisees, I got a lot of phone calls because of kind of my experience and what I do. A lot of Shelf Genie franchisees reaching out to me like, hey man, should we be freaked out? Like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like, they didn't really know how to react to it. So, you know, from your experience, is a potential acquisition of a franchisor something that a franchisee or a prospective franchisee should be concerned about? Is there any potential negative? And this might be a loaded question, but is it something a franchisee should be concerned about? Because I've had, you know, even candidates that I work with, you know, recently or working with now, like, well, what if this franchisor gets acquired? I'm like, well, what if, you know, I get hit by a truck tomorrow? I don't, you know, you can't always just, what
let's,
if?
Let's hope that doesn't happen. So I would say, right, predominantly no. There's certain situations where I could say, yeah, that it's scary, sure, but they're few and far between. I think what people have to remember is that most private equity firms are not investing in franchisors and franchise systems to see it go to shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they obviously want to invest in the business, become the majority shareholder because they see opportunity. Right. And they think that they can tweak some things or, you know, invest more in franchise development to grow the system, to provide greater scale for the Z's, to provide better pricing for you guys as franchisees. You know, in your particular example, I mean, if Neighborly called and I was a franchise owner, I would absolutely want to pick up the phone.
Right? Yeah, no doubt.
They're great stewards of the brand. Same for Authority Brands, some franchise concepts. You know, those bigger players in the space that are coming, you know, in and acquiring some of these other brands, they're best in class, right? And they treat their franchisees very, very well. And probably have more experience than, you know, everyone that's listening to this podcast combined in terms of understanding franchising. So I don't, you know, because we had our clients ask us that all the time, right? Like, hey, how do I tell my employees?
Yeah.
And when to bring them under the tent, and how will things change? And more often than not, I would say, you know, things are pretty good in normal course post-closing,
yeah.
Right? I mean, good question for you, right? I mean, Neighbourly's owned the business for 2 months. Has anything really changed for you?
So not in terms of our day-to-day as franchise owners, which is good, right? Right. But what Neighbourly's made it very clear to us as franchisees is their goal is not to have our day-to-day impacted. They want us to keep doing what we've been doing as franchisees. They've made it very clear their goal is to provide resources that we can leverage to better run our businesses and grow our businesses. And that was, you know, my message to the franchisees that reached out to me, which is, I can't imagine how this is going to negatively impact any of us as franchisees. I just can't. You know, Neighbourly's got, I think Shelf Genie made the 27th brand that Neighbourly owns. They've got so many resources and so much experience that we will now have access to. So, I mean, basically my feedback to the franchisees that reached out to me was, you know, my guess is 2 years from now, you'll be able to say that you haven't really seen any impact in your day-to-day business, especially any negative impact, but your balance sheet and your profit and loss statement will show positive impacts because, you know, it's in Neighbourly's best interest that they help us grow our businesses, but also help us be even more profitable than we have. And that's how they can see the strongest return on their investment in Shelf Genie.
No doubt, right? And I know that to even just put it bad, right? You know, you have Harvest Partners who's backing Neighbourly, and they're a, you know, multi-billion-dollar private equity group out of New York, and they want nothing more than to see Neighbourly succeed.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's what all franchise owners and franchisees should remember, is that the franchisor, if a private equity investor comes in, the last thing they want to do is see that franchise system fail. Right.
Yeah.
And I think once people realize how much alignment there really is, they begin to kind of feel better about the whole thing. It's not as scary.
No doubt. That's what I kept bringing people back to, is that mutual alignment. And also, not to mention, if you're a, you know, multi-billion dollar private equity company out of New York, you probably have better things to do than worry about how a Shelf Genie franchisee in Wilmington, North Carolina is handling their day to day. Like,
I'm not going to make assumptions, but
yeah, I would feel pretty safe with that assumption. Well, this has been good, man. I want to pick your brain a little bit about, you know, kind of your entrepreneurial experience, and had a lot of different types of entrepreneurs on the podcast, some that own franchises, yeah, some that have started businesses from scratch. You know, your entrepreneurial journey has been a little bit different, but, you know, definitely, you know, an entrepreneur in your own right. You know, what would you say to the aspiring entrepreneur out there in terms of just advice, and also, you know, things that you've picked up over the years working with so many different companies and helping them strategically with their businesses?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if we ever talked about this, but so I played baseball back in college, mm-hmm, right? And, you know, the one thing that I think sports kind of taught me growing up was failure and how to get really good at failing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, if you think about it, you know, you get a hit 3 out of 10 times in baseball, you're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
No one talks about the other 7 times that you maybe struck out and looked like an idiot swinging the curveball in the dirt, or you know, hit a pop fly to the second baseman. I mean, whatever it was.
And, yep,
you know, I was a pitcher. We're going to give up hits, right? You're going to give up home runs. You're going to blow saves, whatever it may be. You know, for me as an entrepreneur, it comes back to knowing how to fail.
Mm.
And a key characteristic we look for in our guys here at Boxwood, right? And if I were to tell you kind of my career path and where I am now, where I thought I would be, it all comes back to doors closing, right? And I think that's probably a lot of the same things that you guys experience and your listeners experience from the franchising or just the general entrepreneurship, right? You know, I really was hoping for an opportunity to play baseball after college. Door closed, right?
Yep.
Whether it was in my control, out of my control, door closed. I graduated undergrad in 2008. I thought I was going to work on Wall Street in New York. Bad time to graduate college, door closed.
No doubt, yeah.
Thought I was going to still do M&A work, you know, coming out of school, and wanted to do kind of the banking stuff I'm doing now, and door closed. and ended up in audit, right? Ended up getting my CPA, my master's of accounting. Tried to get into investment banks after a couple of years, private equity firms even, doors closed, right? And then got an opportunity to come back to Boxwood. And, you know, I was the first intern here in 08, and then the first associate, or second associate, I should say, in 2013, took over for a buddy of mine and been here ever since, right? And we didn't hire our third guy until January 2018. And now we're up to eight. If you had told me, you know, I mean, if you just go back to the beginning, right? Door closed, door closed, door closed, small opening. And the small openings led to bigger and better things, right? So everything in my mind, right, was when I was younger, I thought it was a failure, right? I failed at this, I failed at that. I just didn't know that they're all leading to something kind of bigger and better. And, you know, had a, you know, conversation with my dad that I'll never forget. And it was about building a foundation for where you want to be 10 years from now, right? And making sure you keep the right mindset around how are you going to leverage these experiences, even if it's not something you want to be doing, right? Yeah. Or you think something you think is below you or boring or whatever it may be. Leveraging those experiences to create a foundation to build on for when that right door does open. And I think that's something that we've, you know, I think our clients in particular, that's why I think we get along with our clients so well, right? I mean, you talked about Duden earlier. You know, I could pick up the phone and call Jeff right now, or call Josh or Barry from Shelf Genie, Andy, whoever it may be, Dave LaValle. They're all going to pick up the phone and, you know, we can shoot the breeze and talk about, you know, the struggles of building a business, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are entrepreneurs just like our clients are. And I think that's, it's been a wild and crazy road. And I go to bed most nights thinking about what I didn't do today and what I have to do tomorrow versus focusing on, you know, the business that we're building.
Yeah, man, it's such good advice and such a necessary mindset for any entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur to have. You know, I think about it too. So many doors closed along the way. Like if you'd have asked me right out of college, you know, where I wanted to be 10 years from now, I'd have been like, you know, I want to be a group rental manager for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Yeah, I was drinking that Enterprise Kool-Aid so hard. And, you know, through a series of doors closing, what at the time felt like just devastating, you know, situations, other doors have opened. But to your point, you've got to lay that foundation. You've got to build off of the experiences and everything you do, figure out what can I learn from this and how can I apply it going forward? And then that's what puts you in the position to capitalize on the right door when it does open. Even if it just cracks open a little bit, you can run through it.
Yeah, I think it's totally agree with that. And for us, right, you know, as much as our clients look to us more often than not for advice on deals, right, and how to get through a process and whatnot, you know, we've collectively learned a lot from them, right? I mean, a couple of quotes, you know, we sold a label business over the summer, and, you know, one of the founders of the business was like, hey, whatever you're doing, always have something in life to look forward to. Mm. I was like, all right, I'm gonna jot that down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, perfection is an obstacle to progress. Right. And, you know, I'm a CPA by trade, or I was, right? I mean, I like to be in the details. Well, sometimes having something 90% right versus 100 is okay. Because you gotta move and you gotta keep moving forward.
No doubt.
I think there's a lot of things that we get, you know, and then, you know, preacher, I mean, Jeff Duden, I mean, that guy's a visionary, right? I mean, he's got a tremendous podcast and the content he puts out. He truly understands how to methodically go around the decision-making process. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you start to learn from other entrepreneurs, and having, you know, networks, within whatever industry you're in is really important. And we've been fortunate enough to, you know, personally, I've been fortunate enough to learn a lot from my clients, along the way.
Yeah. It's a great point. I mean, a lot of nuggets there, but yeah, I think perfection is a lot of times, you know, it's unattainable in most cases. Action is really what you need to be looking for. And that's how you continue to grow, not sitting around waiting to get something perfect. So,
yeah, and then the last point, right, just, you know, is, you know, we joke in the office with some of the guys here, but, you know, we have this kind of internal motto of kind of like, why not us? Right. you know, everyone's got bigger and better competitors out there, right? And again, go back to, you know, playing sports, whatever it is growing up, right? I mean, why not us? Why can't we be, you know, 50 people and do 50 deals a year?
Yeah.
Same for other entrepreneurs, right? Like, why can't you own 15 territories in Shelf Genie and 20 in Koala? I mean, why not you? And we kind of just come back to that, you know, that internal drive and competitiveness and ambition that kind of just gets us out of bed in the morning, right? I mean, you know, most people don't know this about us, and we're a little bit different firm, but I mean, we're highly, highly incentive-based in our compensation. You know, if our guys didn't want to come to work tomorrow, they wouldn't be missing a huge, you know, base salary check.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, they get out of bed and everyone gets here and we all work together, but it comes back to the broader point is just your team. And as you build the business, focusing on building out the right team and the right culture, where everyone's rowing the boat in the same direction.
Yeah.
And I think the sooner you get and kind of buy into a vision and get everyone on the same page and involve everyone in that decision, you know, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you know, you're just seeing success kind of multiply at a rapid pace.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's one thing just about any business is going to have in common is you got to have the right people and the right seats on your bus. Otherwise, your business is going nowhere. Man, this has been great, dude. You have shared some amazing insight, some amazing advice. I can't let you go until we hit the lightning round, though. This is something that every guest that comes on the podcast goes through with me. So we'll run through that real quickly, and then I'll let you get to your evening. But first question of the lightning round is simply, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And that can be in business or just general life advice.
Oh, man. Putting me on the spot. Best advice I've ever received. Trust the process. I preached that to our guys and our team here. You know, I heard a great quote from a college basketball coach a long time ago, right, that said, you know, you prepare 363 days a year for 31 games.
Yeah.
Right. And you get an opportunity to play 31 times in 362 days or whatever, you know, take off Christmas and, you know, July 4th or whatever it is. But,
yep,
you know, it's all about the process and making sure that you stay true to that. And the more you stay true to your own process, whatever it may be, the better off you're going to prepare and you'll be ready when the opportunity comes up.
No doubt. I love that. Trust the process. Very, very relevant to franchising as well,
yeah.
Right? Trust the process.
Touché.
That's part of what you're buying is the process. Next question is, do you have any sort of a morning routine? Anything that you try to do in the mornings to prime yourself for a successful day?
Man, depends on the day.
Well, I know you have kids.
Yeah, I got two little girls, but under four, two, three, almost four and one and a half. I mean, as soon as that clock hits seven, right, one of them is running out of bed.
Yeah.
The other one's probably screaming for me. But,
yeah.
I would say no morning routine. I mean, my morning routine, candidly, just, or at least it used to, depends on where I am.
Yeah.
More often than not, I wake up in a hotel room or I'm waking up at 4 a.m. to get on a plane to Charlotte or Atlanta to connect to somewhere else for the day. So no true morning routine. I do, you know, when I am home, I try to work out sometimes. And then, you know, take 10 or 15 minutes, clear out the inbox, you know, see if there's anything I got to flag for the day and be aware of, but really just try to, you know, I used to make fun of my dad for waking up so early. I'm like, why are you up at 5 a.m? Now I have kids and now I realize an hour a day to yourself where you can kind of think and read and not kind of have to be, thinking about other things.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that's, yeah, it's different for everyone, and it's why I like to ask the question because, you know, everyone has kind of something different. But, yeah, I mean, getting just a little bit of time to yourself to gather your thoughts and stuff before the chaos of the day hits. That's cool and can definitely relate. Got a daughter that's almost four and number two due here in less than a month. So it's hard to find that time to yourself, but it's precious time when you do get it.
Yeah, it's the best time, though. So.
No doubt. Not sure if you're a big reader or not. If you are, share with us what book you're reading right now.
So, I love playing golf now. My shoulder doesn't allow me to throw baseball much anymore. So I love golf. I've actually gotten really into just golf course architecture.
Oh, cool.
So I read a book recently. Probably the last book I read was a book about the making of abandoned dunes out in Oregon.
Okay, very cool.
Kind of love that stuff. And it takes my mind off of, the Wall Street Journal, The Economist, and all the, industry reports I'm always reading. It's just nice to kind of break away and read something different.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny you mentioned abandoned dunes. I have a buddy from high school that's, an avid golfer, but also a good photographer. And I've seen recently online, he's been posting a bunch of pictures from that course. I guess he took a trip out there and did a big photo shoot or something. So it's funny that you mentioned that. Final question before we wrap this up is, what is your definition of freedom and are you living it?
My definition of freedom, to make enough money in this world where at some point, you wake up in the morning and you can decide what you're going to do with your day.
Yeah.
And be your own boss. And I would argue I'm living it to an extent, right?
Yeah.
And my definition of freedom and someone else's may be totally different. For me, it's always about getting better every day. So I don't know that I'm ever going to be able to truly say that I'm free, because I really like to be active and do things. But that is my, right now definition of freedom, and, I'm having fun doing it.
Well, I think that's what it's all about, right? Is like you said earlier, that you had heard from a client, make sure you always have something to look forward to in life. But it's interesting, and why I asked the question in the lightning round, because everyone's definition of freedom is a little bit different. And I think that's how it should be, at least to an extent. And, I would say
what you're doing now, your definition of freedom was going out and doing this on your own and starting something new. So, I mean, there's so many ways to kind of define it. It really depends on the person.
Yeah. And a common theme, especially with the successful people I've had on the podcast, is I don't know that anyone's ever really said like, yeah, I'm 100% there, because everyone that, comes on this podcast is like-minded in the sense that they're always growing. They're always looking to get better. And so I think, freedom is something you're always chasing to an extent, because you never feel like you've 100% gotten there. I think that's part of the beauty.
I mean, we had it last weekend, right? You watch the Masters and you see Tiger Woods, and you could argue that, he should be, never have a care in the world because he's done everything he can do. And then he goes and makes a 10 on a hole. Right.
Yeah.
What I love about it is the guy turns around and birdies 5 of the last 6 holes. And, he's always looking for reasons to get better. Right.
Yep.
And if guys at the top of their game like that, whether it be in business or sports, are always looking for ways to get better, then I suspect the rest of us are going to be doing the same for a long time to come.
No doubt. Well, not to mention a guy like Tiger doesn't even have to play anymore. Like,
right.
It's not like he has to worry about how he's going to pay the bills, right? He could just retire and chill, but he's driven and he's always, looking to get better. And he likes to compete.
You and I are always going to have to worry about that.
Yeah, probably. Especially with young kids, right?
Especially girls.
Yeah, exactly. I'm lucky. My second one's a boy, so I'm catching a little bit of a break there. But well, Brian, man, can't tell you how much I appreciate this. Great catching up with you. We need to talk more often, but I really appreciate you taking time to join me here on the Path to Freedom podcast. Where can people connect with you, and where can people learn more about Boxwood Partners?
Sure. Just boxwoodpartners.com. My email address is on there. Find me on LinkedIn. Or reach out to you. I mean, you know where to find me as well, but I really appreciate the opportunity to come on. Thanks again for having me, and looking forward to doing it again. Maybe with, get some Boxwood clients on here with you guys. We can do a little roundtable discussion.
There's several that have already been on the podcast. So we can just get everyone together and do a group sesh. That'd be fun. Thanks so much. Thanks for dropping in.
All right, man. Hey, thanks again. See you, bud.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number 2FRDM.com, or shoot me an email at Wes@path2freedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.